The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop, looking out over London.
Good night, and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight. With Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening.
This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high-wage jobs. Will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
This was not a particularly good speech, but what it lacked in quality, it made up in length. This speech was like watching paint lie. Leading up to the big speech, the president refused to give any spoilers.
You'll hear the State of the Union, and then you'll see what happens right after the State of the Union.
Okay, yes. That is how time works. Thank you very much. Yeah. Trump started the night by choosing Energy Secretary Rick Perry as the designated survivor. So, that's in case, if something, God forbid, had happened to the Capitol tonight, a meteor took out all of our leadership, Rick Perry would be our only hope. And an expert on Rick Perry has this reaction to that choice.
Oops.
Yeah, oops indeed. Of course, he bragged more about the economy.
And we are considered far and away the hottest economy anywhere in the world.
It is so hot. If it wasn't my economy, perhaps I'd be dating it. And no. I love a hot economy. The evening went on and on. GOP lawmakers stood up and sat down so many times, it sounded like they were making popcorn with their kneecaps. He made a not-so-subtle threat to House Democrats.
An economic miracle is taking place in the United States, and the only thing that can stop it are foolish wars, politics, or ridiculous partisan investigations.
You heard me. You get the truth or a functioning economy, okay? Keep in mind, I turn this sucker off for a month over a wall. You think I won't burn this place to the ground to stay out of jail? Okay? I'm just saying, nice country you got here. Shame. Shame that something happened to it. And in that same vein, he kept going in what was clearly, what he clearly thought was a line that would get a standing ovation.
If there is going to be peace and legislation, there cannot be war and investigation. It just doesn't work that way.
Unbelievable.
Even the Republicans were like, hey, did he, what? What's, nice try on that argument. You can't have legislation and investigation. Whoever heard of law and order? Come on. You can't have both. You have to choose. You have to give me that one. And Trump talked the talk on immigration.
Now is the time for Congress to show the world that America is committed to ending illegal immigration and putting the ruthless coyotes, cartels, drug dealers, and human traffickers out of business.
And no one knows how to put something out of business like Donald Trump. You can take that to the bank because they are repossessing it in the Chapter 11. Now, Trump knows. Trump was bravely willing to take credit for any good thing that happened in the country.
No one has benefited more from our thriving economy than women who have filled 58% of the newly created jobs last year.
Most of those jobs were new Democratic women in Congress. And Trump supported their celebration with this.
You weren't supposed to do that.
Donald Trump trying to tell women what to do is why they won. But, brought it all home with a simple plea.
I am asking you to choose greatness, no matter the trials we face.
Well, in that case, sir, I choose you face a trial, because that will be great.
All right. There was a bit of Stephen Colbert's take on last night's State of the Union address. He did a live show last night on CBS because, you know, he's not afraid of a little hard work. So good for him. And that monologue went on for probably about 12 minutes. I had to cut it down a lot. So go back and listen to the whole thing because it was funnier than what I played, but I couldn't, you know, very well play 12 minutes of Colbert's monologue, but you get the idea. I bit the bullet. I watched the thing last night, the State of the Union address, which was just, I guess, everything we expected. I mean, it was Donald Trump being Donald Trump. He lied and he gaslighted. He said it was going to be all about working together and bipartisanship and comedy with a T. It was just as despicable and uncomfortable as you'd imagine. For those who stuck around to watch Stacey Abrams, she did a great job with her response, which wasn't really a response. Stacey Abrams delivered a speech, and she told her story and made a great case for herself, and I thought she was great. I am a Stacey Abrams fan, although some of the things I've learned about her in recent days are a bit disconcerting, like she's on the board of the Center for American Progress and some other questionable alliances. Now, I get it. She needs a job. I just think she may not be as progressive as we project onto her. But that aside, she did a great job. And I think she was a great choice for Chucky Schmucky to pick to deliver the response. That said, I've got to address it again because this is what I've been dealing with for the last, more than 24 hours. We talked about a little bit yesterday with Gotta Laugh. I've been inundated on Twitter because I dared to ask the question, what do the Bernie haters think about the fact that Kamala Harris announced she was going to deliver her remarks before the State of the Union address? And the hypocritical responses I got. It's okay because she's speaking before them. She's not upstate. Really? When you speak before someone, you cut in line ahead of them. That's the definition of upstaging. Just saying. But again, I was attacked by people of color because Bernie, how dare he do what he's done for the last 2 years and deliver his own response to the State of the Union address on social media. Big fucking deal. But so many people got so bent out of shape about it to the point where this morning I was attacked by Chris Lavoie of the Stephanie Miller Show. Now, granted, I don't listen to Stephanie Miller much. Honestly, I'm working when she's on the air. So I don't listen to many other shows, not only Stephanie Miller's. Honestly, I don't listen to a lot of other shows, except when I'm in the car. And I'm not in the car in the morning. During the 2016 elections, anytime I tuned in, it seemed like it was the bash Bernie hour. And now I see, you know, I guess it's it's endemic to the show. But the ugliness from this guy, first of all, he butted into my mention, accused me of attacking Zerlina Maxwell, which I didn't. Zerlina also responded to my tweet in a kind of a snarky, fucked up manner, but, you know, such is her right. But by God, this Chris Lavoie guy just went after me on Twitter this morning to the point where I finally blocked him. Let me say this again. I defend Bernie Sanders' right to speak because he's got a right to speak. He's a U.S. senator, and actually he's been a really good public servant. And the only reason we are now, all the Democratic, or most of the Democratic candidates for 2020 are talking about Medicare for all, or, you know, debt-free, tuition-free community college and state college, and a lot of those other ideas, is because Bernie Sanders brought them to the mainstream. And yet these people, all they can do, he's not a Democrat. He's not a Democrat. Well, fuck you. I wouldn't be a Democrat either at this point, the way he was treated, if not, you know, for my desire to vote in the primary. Because although I haven't yet decided who I'm going to vote for in the primary, because the first caucuses are still a fucking year away, and not everyone has declared. We don't even know who's in the field. We haven't seen any debates. It's just starting. My God, it's too early. I'm being excoriated for people who just hate Bernie Sanders. And then Chris Lavoie's like, just because we disagree with someone doesn't mean we hate them. Yeah, in this case, it does. God, I'm sick of this. For over 24 hours, I have been batting away and blocking people on Twitter. For once, I'm glad that my tweets don't automatically post on Facebook anymore, because I'd be fighting this war on two fronts. I'm not supposed to be blocking you. I'm supposed to be blocking the maggots. Here are people who call themselves progressives, yet they will. Some of the most vile comments I've seen about Bernie Sanders in the last 24 hours on my Twitter stream. It's really disgusting, and I'm really sick of it. And frankly, I don't know that I'll survive the next year doing this. I really don't, because of the ugliness. The only way we're going to get rid of Donald Trump is if we can, on the left, become a team of sorts. As I've said, there are plenty of candidates running that I'm not particularly enamored of, but I don't sit here and tear them down all day. What I will do is I'll voice concerns, but I would rather tout the good things that the candidates are about. And then, you know, give it time. We've got all the time in the world. We shouldn't be in campaign mode at this point. Again, it's a year away from the first, from the Iowa caucuses. They are on February 3rd, a year away. I don't know about you, but I can't do this for the next year. So I got to think of something else to do. I'm not saying I'm going to quit the show, but maybe we need to expand our reach, because I can't do this. Somebody like fucking Chris Lavoie, how dare he? Plus, he doesn't even know who I am. He went on subtweeting me after I blocked him about how I'm a bad debater, and that's why I don't go on Bill O'Reilly's show anymore. What the fuck is he talking about? I've never been on Bill O'Reilly's show. I've never been invited, nor would I go if I were. Because I'm not an attention whore like some people. Just saying. All right. Had to get that out there. And actually, I do have to get on Twitter, because it's a way, it's how you promote. It's how I promote the show these days. You know, I'm a independent contractor. I'm out here on my own. Thankfully, you know, I'm on the Progressive Voices Network, but if not for them, it's very hard in this crowded podcast field to break through. I know most of you don't know who Chris Lavoie is. He works on the Stephanie Miller Show. He's her board op. He's neither here nor there, except, you know, why he's coming out of the woodwork to attack me. I guess he just wants to you know, get his name out there. I don't know. It's sad. It's all sad, but not nearly as sad as what we witnessed last night. Well, I guess we'll go through it in what's news. Let me tell you what's coming up in the second half hour. We will not be continuing this. Gaius Publius will be here making his 2019 debut at a time when Gaius Publius is letting us in on the secret of his actual real name. He has started writing under his real name So we'll get to that in the second half hour of the show. But first, I guess let's get right to what's news and what happened last night.
I read the news today, oh boy.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
All right. Well, Donald Trump's 2019 State of the Union address is now history, such as it is. And it went pretty much as expected, despite White House claims of comity and bipartisanship and us all getting along. Trump resorted to his usual lies and gaslighting. In fact, in the first few moments of his 82-minute diatribe, Trump actually issued a threat over investigations. Rachel Maddow commented on the weirdness immediately following the speech.
There was one strange moment in the address early on that did not connect to other portions of the speech. It was received oddly in the room. Nobody was quite sure what to do with it. The president, again, towards the beginning of his speech, saying an economic miracle is taking place in the United States, and the only thing that can stop it are foolish wars, politics, or ridiculous partisan investigations. He continued, if there is going to be peace and legislation, there cannot be war and investigation. It just doesn't work that way. We must be united at home to defeat our adversaries abroad.
Uh-oh.
The camera at that moment in the hall caught Congressman Adam Schiff, the chairman of the Intelligence Committee, appearing to laugh a little bit, not like sort of laughing to taunt the president, but seeming to not be able to stifle a giggle. And again, Nancy Pelosi did seem to signal to her side of the room at that point that they should not respond. It was a weird moment. It was a fairly normal State of the Union address with one very strange moment, perhaps the strangest moment I've ever seen in any State of the Union.
The strangest moment she's ever seen in any State of the Union. And again, I'm sorry, I can't interpret this as in any way other than as a threat.
If there is going to be peace and legislation, there cannot be war and investigation.
Oh, so clever.
It just doesn't work that way.
Oh, really? I think he thought that was going to be a bumper sticker. And I think he thought it was going to be a big applause line. But instead, people went, what the fuck? Now, the women in the House Democratic Caucus all wore white to honor the legacy of women's suffrage in the U.S. This was the idea of the House Democratic Women's Working Group. And they actually invited women of both parties to wear white, but it seems that none of the Republicans joined in. During his speech, Donald Trump's celebration of women's employment was appropriated by those women who congratulated themselves over their accomplishments.
No one has benefited more from a thriving economy than women, who have filled 58% of the newly created jobs last year.
And now they're, you know, giving themselves credit.
You weren't supposed to do that.
You weren't supposed to do that?
Thank you very much.
What?
Thank you very much.
Thank you very, thank you? Oh, wait a minute. We need this for that. Yeah. He didn't know how to react to that. So he thanked them. Cue the laugh track. By the way, it's only fair to note that the Republicans also elected a woman to Congress in the last elections. That would be one woman. Laugh track adds to it. Although we just emerged from the longest government shutdown in history, Trump made no mention of it in his address. No mention of the hundreds of thousands of federal workers who had to go without a paycheck and the probably millions of people who were affected by contractors or just down the line. His lies were numerous. In a statement, Nancy Pelosi said, quote, "It'll take days to fact check all the misrepresentations the president made tonight." That's true. The Washington Post fact checker detailed close to 30 such lies. Here's one. He said, "Lawmakers in New York cheered with delight upon passage of legislation that would allow a baby to be ripped from the mother's womb moments before birth." Yeah, that's a lie. Actually, the bill expands access to abortion after 24 weeks to women carrying a fetus that cannot live outside the womb. The speech as a whole was just horribly, laughably horribly written, reportedly by Stephen Miller. And it contained even more outlandish remarks. Oh, like this.
Part of a bold new diplomacy, we continue our historic push for peace on the Korean Peninsula. Our hostages have come home. Nuclear testing has stopped. And there has not been a missile launch in more than 15 months. If I had not been elected president of the United States, we would right now, in my opinion, be in a major war with North Korea.
Unbelievable. It is unbelievable that he did this.
Much work remains to be done, but my relationship with Kim Jong-un is a good one. Chairman Kim and I will meet again on February 27th and 28th in Vietnam.
Okay. So, again, he said those words and my jaw dropped. If I weren't elected president, we would be at war with North Korea now. What the fuck? Now, the official Democratic response was delivered by the woman who, if not for her state's voter suppression tactics, would be the governor of Georgia. Stacey Abrams is a rising star in the Democratic Party, and she delivered what's being touted as the best response to a State of the Union address ever.
We know bipartisanship could craft a 21st century immigration plan, but this administration chooses to cage children and tear families apart. Compassionate treatment at the border is not the same as open borders. President Reagan understood this. President Obama understood this. Americans understand this. And Democrats stand ready to effectively secure our ports and borders.
Okay, sound is pretty good. You want more?
Just a few weeks ago, I joined volunteers to distribute meals to furloughed federal workers. They waited in line for a box of food and a sliver of hope since they hadn't received paychecks in weeks. Making livelihoods of our federal workers a pawn for political games is a disgrace.
Yep.
The shutdown was a stunt engineered by the President of the United States, one that defied every tenet of fairness and abandoned not just our people, but our values.
Stacey Abrams, delivering the official State of the Union response. Now, for the third year in a row, Senator Bernie Sanders took to social media after the official response to share his own response, and he called Trump out on his lies.
I know that this will probably not shock you. I hate to say this, but not everything Donald Trump said tonight was true or accurate. Tonight, when we talk about the economy, tonight and on numerous occasions since he has taken office, President Trump has told the American people that the U.S. economy is the hottest economy anywhere in the world, that it is really booming. Well, that may be true for the members of his Mar-a-Lago Country Club, for those folks who go to Trump's club, and for the wealthiest people in our nation. Trump is right. The economy is really booming. In fact, for many of President Trump's billionaire friends, the truth is they have never, ever had it so good. Despite what President Trump says, this is not a hot economy when 43% of households can't afford to pay for housing, food, childcare, healthcare, transportation, and a cell phone without going into debt. That is not a hot economy for ordinary Americans.
No, it is not.
The economy is not booming when half of Americans 55 years of age and older have no idea how they will live out the last years of their lives.
Hello.
With dignity.
Yep.
Because they have no retirement savings.
Welcome to my world. See, Bernie Sanders speaks to me. And he speaks to millions of Americans. And if you don't like him, that's fine. But he's not a Democrat. He's got no right to speak. Fuck him. Those are the kind of, that's the kind of shit I'm getting. And fuck you for supporting him. Well, you know what? Fuck you. By the way, Bernie Sanders did note that Trump didn't mention climate change, Medicare, voter suppression, or Social Security, issues that the senator said all Americans face, not just Trump's billionaire friends. And also, by the way, I mentioned Kamala Harris did her little speech beforehand, which I guess was okay with all the Sanders critics, because she was doing it before, not after, as if that makes one iota of a difference. But Chris Murphy, Sherrod Brown, I believe Kirsten Gillibrand, and others also did their own responses on social media. Where's the fucking outrage? Just asking. Yesterday afternoon, ahead of this I find unconscionable. But this is the way it works in the real world. Ahead of his State of the Union address, Donald Trump hosted a private, off-the-record lunch for television so-called news anchors, in which he badmouthed a slew of Democrats. All the ABC, NBC, CBS, Fox, local anchors, and I think CNN and Fox News. I don't think MSNBC was included, but CNN was there. They all had representatives there. And according to the New York Times, Trump dismissed former Vice President Joe Biden as dumb, called to Senator Chuck Schumer of New York a, quote, nasty son of a bitch. He mocked Governor Ralph Northam of Virginia, who he said, chug like a dog. And he again badmouthed the late Senator John McCain, forcing these news anchors to sit through, again, his recounting of the story of McCain, you know, coming out at 3 o'clock in the morning and going thumbs down to the repeal of the Affordable Care Act. Trump reportedly told the assembled, by the way, he wrote a book and it bombed. What a small, little, petty, ugly man. Just in every sense of the word, just an ugly fucking man who also said this.
Here in the United States, we are alarmed by the new calls to adopt socialism.
Oh, fuck you. All right. Sorry. I'm not going to play the whole clip. We will not be a socialist nation. I guess he's telescoping his campaign platform for 2020. By the way, there's news happening today. There are hearings today in the newly democratically controlled House of Representatives. The House Judiciary Committee is holding its first hearing in 8 years on preventing gun violence. It's called Preventing Gun Violence, a Call to Action. The despicable Matt Gaetz of Florida, by the way, was trying to have the fathers of Joaquin Oliver and Jamie Gutenberg, two of the kids who were killed 5 minutes from my house almost a year ago, in Parkland. He tried to have them ejected from the hearing. What a piece of shit. There are two hearings being held today on climate change. One in the House Energy and Commerce Committee, the first one in 6 years, and one in the National Resources Committee, the first in 8 years. And there's some news out of Virginia too, where I guess I need to do this. Oh, yeah. Sweet Virginia. A lot of shit on the shoes down there or up there, depending where you're at. Governor Ralph Northam is still refusing to resign after that racist photo surfaced from his 1984 medical school yearbook page. Lieutenant Governor Justin Fairfax, who's next in line, has now been accused by a woman. Her name is Dr. Vanessa Tyson. She's come forth. She's issued a statement. It's very credible. She's accusing him of sexual assault back in 2004. So the next one in line would be Virginia's Attorney General. His name is Matt Herring. Well, the news broke this morning that in 1980, Mark Herring, sorry, Virginia's now Attorney General, also appeared in blackface. What the fuck is up with Virginia? In a statement, he said, quote, in 1980, when I was a 19-year-old undergraduate in college, some friends suggested we attend a party dressed like rappers we listened to at the time, like Curtis Blow, and perform a song. It sounds ridiculous even now writing it, but because of our ignorance and glib attitudes, and because we did not have an appreciation for the experiences and perspectives of others, we dressed up and put on wigs and brown makeup. Fourth in line, in case you were wondering, in Virginia, is the State House Speaker, who a guy named Kirk Cox, who, as the name would imply, is a Republican. Democrats, purveyors of the circular firing squad. I don't know where we go from here. Okay. Shit. Seriously, I don't know where we go from here. The Intercept, you know, I keep mentioning with regards to Bernie Sanders that even those, the haters out there, and yes, there are haters out there. It's okay to say you hate them. You make it apparent with your tweets. You don't have to be like Chris Lavoie and say, just because we criticize someone doesn't mean we hate them. I read your timeline. You hate them. Own it. Anyway, most of the other candidates wouldn't be on board with Medicare for all if it were not for Bernie Sanders doing all the legwork for not only the last 3 years, but the last 20 years or more. Well, there's a piece up at The Intercept that's really disconcerting. Ryan Graham published it yesterday. Top Nancy Pelosi aide privately tells insurance executives not to worry about Democrats pushing Medicare for all. I'll link to this from the blog. Our friend of the show, Gaius Publius, has actually written about it for the last couple of weeks over at downwithtyranny.com. The first one was January 24th. This one was when, January 21st and again on the 24th, he wrote two pieces about Medicare for All. The Democratic Party auditioned for 2020 and improved Medicare for All or watered down Medicare for All. Well, let's find out. Just got to find the Gaius Publius intro.
All rise for Gaius Publius.
That's not his real name.
You call Gaius Publius into question?
Sure.
Very well. For the audience at home.
What is the real name of Gaius Publius?
Gaius Publius.
Oh! Another winner!
Joins Nicole Sandler on NicoleSandler.com.
And he's here. Now, if you go looking for these two Gaius Publius articles up at downwithtyranny.com, you may not find them because our pal Gaius Publius is now writing under his given name, which is, it's my drum roll, my low budget drum roll, Thomas Neuberger. Hey, Tom.
How are you, Nicole? Can you hear me?
I can hear you just fine. How are you doing?
Excellent. So you've revealed my secret. My pen name has a pen name.
Your pen name has a pen name. And I wouldn't have, except, you know, the byline on both these two pieces at Down with Tyranny about Medicare for All is Thomas Neuberger. And nowhere does it say Gaius Publius. So people might think, well, this is some guy named Thomas Neuberger. Where's my Gaius Publius articles on Medicare for All?
Who let that idiot in, right? actually, at the bottom of the post, Google still has me. Google Blogger still has me as Gaius.
Gotcha.
And I'm about to change that. So if you look at the bottom of the post and say posted by, there you go. Thank you for allowing me to gracefully transition like this.
Oh God, it's my pleasure.
It's time.
It is. And so, you know, back in the early days of blogging, it was before I was doing music radio back then. I wasn't blogging, but everyone used a pseudonym. And I don't know, it's Digby. It was Digby. You're Gaius Publius. We've got Driftglass, who's still Driftglass. I mean, a lot of the old school people, some have dropped the pen names. Others haven't, like Heather Digby Parton, have sort of included into their real name. And you are coming out and saying, hey, this is me. When did you start doing blogging? Back when it began?
Well, actually, I got a couple of pieces up, including one that I'm really still proud of. at Counterpunch in 2003.
Hmm.
And then I started getting really, really nervous about George Bush.
Ah.
I up through 2006, I thought Bush was or Cheney really was going to clamp down. I figured that, you know, he's so power hungry that he might pull some false flag attack and then close the borders. I mean, that unitary executive thing, they were serious about that. And they were getting close to martial law just within the law. Mm-hmm. And I thought, you know, if he declares martial law, it's kind of – so I decided to keep a low profile, and I was communicating with a lot of people via email at that point. But stopped writing and then was invited by John Aravosis to start writing at America Blog in 2010. And I wrote – I've been writing regularly since.
Okay. Well, and as Gaius Publius, and now it's the Trump era, which I would think it's even more frightening than the Bush era. But, you know, it's time to, you know, take control of who you are, I suppose.
Well, you know, that your comment about the Trump era, it is more frightening, but oddly, I'm less frightened, and I don't know why. Hmm. But I'm just less frightened. I guess it's because of the... Between 2010 and today, I've been doing so much climate reading that I know what's coming, even if nobody else does. And I wrote a piece a while back, there will be no Chinese century because there won't be anybody's century. I mean, it just isn't going to happen unless people get on the stick.
Oh, it's true. And, you know, the cynic in me.
That stick will involve Bernie Sanders' revolution,
yeah,
or it will involve descending to chaos. So,
And I think it's going to be descending to chaos based on, you know, the reactions I got to my Bernie Sanders missives this week. It's ugly out there, and I think we are on the road to self annihilation.
Those be the odds, that's for sure. But as somebody in your chat room said earlier in the course of things, it's dire if your house is burning. It's a disaster if it's actually already burnt.
Yeah.
So the house is burning. It's dire. But, you know, we're still not there yet, so we might as well just keep fighting.
We may as well. And so, obviously, climate, I think I interviewed Bernie Sanders before he declared for the presidency last time, and I've got this clip hanging around somewhere, and I asked him what he thinks the biggest national security threat we're facing is, and he said climate change. And he was right.
Yes.
And now people say it, but this was, you know, 4 years ago, and other people weren't saying it. He's been saying it all along. And it's true. And what I started to say before is the cynic in me gets really, I get sad when I hear, you know, someone has a new baby. It should be a moment of joy. And all I can think is, oh, my God, what is this world going to be like when that child hits 20?
Well, I've got two young grandchildren. They are 3 and 1 as we speak. And, you know, if they live to 70, they're going to see all of it.
Yep.
If they live through it.
Yeah.
They're going to see all of it. It's just painful to contemplate.
It really is.
You know, I'm not in charge, and neither are you. It's going to be the masses or the rich.
Right.
And the rich right now are firmly seated.
Yeah. And selfishly. Really selfishly speaking here, I'm glad I'm not going to live to see it. I'm 59 now. I hope I don't have 10 more years. I don't want to be around in this world, but that's me and those are my issues. Anyway, I may not make it for 10 more years because of insurance. How's that for a segue?
Oh, God. Right. That's a painful thought. I'm sorry to hear it.
Yeah, it's my reality. Right. And I'm not alone. Millions of people are in my position. You know, I'm a cancer survivor. I'm actually a two-time cancer survivor. And both melanoma and lung cancer, go figure. And if not for the Affordable Care Act, I wouldn't be able to get insurance. Now, the Affordable Care Act, because of all the way it's been, piece by piece dismantled by the Trump administration, is anything but affordable these days. And if not for the generosity of listeners, I'd be dealing with a new deductible again. Thank God. No, thank my listeners. I've got some amazing people who are supporting the show and what I do. It's the only reason that I'm able to afford the medication that I need. It's a shitty way to live. And all I can think is the way forward would be Medicare for all. Again, something that Bernie Sanders has been pushing for years, if not decades, which has finally come into the mainstream. And so now most of the 2020 Democratic contenders are on board. They're calling for Medicare for all. But Nancy Pelosi, the more we hear about it, maybe is not so much on board with it. You've got a couple of pieces, Thomas, up at downwithtyranny.com that I'll link to from my blog today, about the future of Medicare for all. And in addition to that, the Green New Deal, I think two of the most important ideas going forward that if we don't embrace, we're in for real trouble.
Not only that, from the standpoint of policy and their consequences, but they will be the test cases for the Democratic Party. And based upon how the Democratic Party responds to both of those initiatives, and they're going to be bills, both of those bills, the Bernie Sanders segment of the voting public, which includes many independents as well as many actual self-identified Democratic voters. That is, I vote because I vote for Democrats because I'm a Democrat, even though they're not really members of the party. There's only like 500 members of the party, unlike England. That segment of the voting populace is going to walk away from the Democratic Party as it did in 2016. I've got a section in this piece you're going to talk about, The Past is Prologue, 2016. People walked away from Hillary Clinton for any number of reasons in 2016, and they will walk away from whoever the Democrat is, unless it's a rebel, unless two things happen. Either progressives actually take over the party structure.
Mm-hmm.
That means, and that's unlikely to happen, but you know, you've got to put a different hand at the wheel of the Titanic if the captain is determined full speed ahead. Or the captain will suddenly listen to his advisors and say, okay, you made the case. I'm going to make a sharp left turn. And I picked left deliberately.
Right,
if Nancy Pelosi takes a sharp left turn and Chuck Schumer or whoever's in control of the Senate and whoever is the stand-in for Tom Perez, the head of the DNC, and all of those funders are put in the back seat, and people like Sanders and AOC and all of those people who are in favor of this stuff get control of the party either directly or indirectly because the leaders see the light. There is hope of swamping the Republican in 2020 election. If not, it'll turn into a squeaker. And if they put up a fake progressive, God forbid, Joe Biden is the worst of the worst,
God.
and the oppo on him is going to be brutal because he's guilty of so much. I mean, he's why we have Clarence Thomas, for God's sake,
right.
And a lot of people forgot that.
Yep,
he's why every student who is in debt today is in the degree of debt that they are.
Yep,
he worked for the banking industry to create that debt because one man's debt is another man's credit. And that credit comes with an interest payment that those banks want.
Yeah, and of course, Delaware is the state of the credit card industry, which is what Joe Biden represented. So he was more beholden to the credit card industry than he was to the people.
Absolutely. And you've got up through middling candidates like Kamala Harris and below middling like Cory Booker,
right,
who are going to sound wonderful and they're going to tick off all of the boxes. You're a woman, you're a this, you're a that, which the Democratic Party is in love with.
Yep.
And Sanders and his ilk seem to be the only voices that say the best way to help women and minorities and LGBT and everybody is to make it a class war, not an identity war, because identities ultimately pit people against each other. All of those people with separate identities and pit them against the real oppressors, which is the people with money and power who are soaking in it, soaking in our misery.
Right. And yeah, and they're the ones who don't want this to go through because they're getting rich off of this system. You know, I keep Donald Trump. I don't know if you watched the State of the Union last night. I did.
I tried.
I had to. But you know, the lies that just come. You know, he claimed that he has lowered prescription drug prices more than 46%. And bullshit. I got a $600 prescription sitting at the pharmacy. Waiting for me just to bite the bullet because I have no fucking choice. He hasn't lowered the price of anything. God, does he lie? But he wants to take credit for, you know, this is his gaslighting ways he does things. Tells us the sky is green. Unfortunately his lemmings believe it. You know, he says, and he also repeated the claim that, you know, we're going to, you know, make health care available to everybody and, you know, lower premiums. I mean, his bullshit. While nothing is being done, except they're, you know, trying to kill off the last vestiges of the Affordable Care Act, so I can't even get the insurance that I can't afford anymore. Where are we on Medicare for All? Are there actually going to be hearings? Is there going to be, there's a bill, H.R. 676, that John Conyers had introduced every year. Well, John Conyers is now retired, and Pramila Jayapal is the new House sponsor of the legislation, but they've changed it a little bit, haven't they? The expanded and improved Medicare for All Act?
They will have changed it quite a bit by the time it's released. So the second piece that you refer to in this discussion, improve Medicare for All or water down Medicare
right.
for All, add
mm-hmm.
down the tyranny. If you go hunting for the date, it's January 24th that was published. It was a response to someone who said, someone at Common Dreams who wrote a piece that said, we're screwed because the people who are writing the bill are writing it in secret and they're not going to say they're going to take down the take for profit out of the system, and they're not going to say this and that. And that sounded pretty serious. I mean, they abandoned the signatures, H.R. 676 sort of tag, and that person was quite concerned. So I did some digging, and I talked to people who are involved, who are sitting at the table writing the bill. And as a consequence, I mean, what I discovered is in this post, but the fears are not warranted at this point. I think that it's obvious that profit can't be in the system, but that doesn't mean that profit makers can't be in the system. And I'm not talking about the insurance companies, nor are they. They're talking about the hospitals, for example.
Right. Uh-huh.
So hospitals are for profit.
Yes.
But if they take Medicare for all patients, which is everybody, they can't be reimbursed for their profit. That is, they will have to operate on a not-for-profit basis under Medicare for All. They will not be reimbursed for profit.
Good.
So
as it should
that
be.
That turns them into not-for-profit when they do things where people come in under the Medicare for All umbrella. And if the Medicare for All umbrella covers everyone, then we have what we have in France or in England or in Germany. You walk in the door with a problem and it's fixed for free.
Mm-hmm.
That's what universal coverage and single payer is all about. You don't pay a dime. You don't pay premiums. You don't pay copays. You don't do any of this stuff. And as to the fate of the insurance industries, well, they can still exist selling supplemental insurance.
Sure.
But if the bill is written properly, supplemental insurance is a nice to have, not a need to have.
Right.
So, for example, if you want the nurses in your private room to have gold thread stitched into their uniforms, and they should be between the ages of 23 and 25 and blonde, your supplemental for-profit insurance company will sell you a policy that will guarantee that.
I hope that's not the criteria. I mean, seriously.
I'm being ridiculous on purpose. But you know, there are some Cadillac things that are maybe nice to have.
Right.
For example, it's instead of being in a hospital room with two beds, you get your private room.
Sure.
Right. You get the gourmet meals.
Right.
Or I don't know.
Exactly.
You get to go to the hospital that serves only the rich.
Right.
You should be able to buy that insurance. It is a free country.
That's right.
But nobody who needs it should have to have it in order to get quality care that works.
Exactly. Exactly.
So And they talk about expanded Medicare for all. They're expanding Medicare because Medicare now doesn't cover dental and vision, et cetera, et cetera.
And so they're
have to rewrite Medicare.
Oh, good. So if they're going to include dental and vision, that's a good thing. Yeah, the really disconcerting thing, and I learned about it, you know, when my husband is now on Medicare. Unfortunately, I'm still a few years away. But, you know, we didn't want to get Medicare Advantage because we know it feeds into the for-profit industry, and it's these for-profit insurance companies that are trying to kill off Medicare by offering such a great deal on Medicare Advantage. It's basically no extra premium, and you do get dental, and you get vision, and you get all these other perks that if you got the regular Medicare gap policy, the regular supplemental, you pay through the nose for it and you don't get those extras. This is, I guess, the insurance companies doing sort of a loss leader thing where they know they're still going to make out like bandits because they have such a big margin of profitability built into their deal with the government.
Well, I wouldn't call it loss leader because one of the benefits of that kind of policy where it's entirely private is that those Medicare Advantage policies have to take you.
Yeah, they can deny you.
Which means that they can cherry pick to the healthiest people and they will make a profit off healthy people.
Right. And they can deny the coverage. With Medicare, correct, as I've learned some from friends who've had catastrophic illnesses on, you know, regular Medicare, they take it. There's no denying the claim. These for-profit companies will. They'll fight you tooth and nail on every single thing, and you could be dying, and they're going to deny the treatment, which wouldn't happen in straight-ahead Medicare.
Right. So I would be optimistic about Medicare for All. I think the Green New Deal is a little bit trickier. Uh-huh. I don't want to sidetrack this discussion about
that. No, that's
that.
Fine. Let's
that's
do it.
That's the other of my two tests.
Uh-huh.
But Medicare for All, there are very, very strong voices at the table, including Social Security Works, which is an extremely strong voice. That's Nancy Altman
and
Eric Larson. Alex Lawson.
Alex Lawson
is their executive director, and he's a force.
Yes, he is.
And Jayapal is doing a lot of the right things. I mean, I don't think we should distrust her.
No, I don't.
It's so simple, Medicare for All, that it's not going to be that difficult to implement when you compare it to something like taking down the fossil fuel industry.
Mm-hmm.
It's easier to convert to not-for-profit full coverage health insurance. From a practical standpoint, from a political standpoint, it's tough because, as I noted in that first piece, every piece of money in the world is going to oppose it. And everybody in Congress takes money, not everybody, but I there's a little segment there about congressional call time, which people tend to forget about. But people are, when you come to Congress, you're told 4 hours a day, call time.
Right, which for people who don't know what call time is, it's dialing for dollars. You are taken to a room, first of all, outside of the Capitol because you can't ask for donations from your office. So it's a separate building. And you're put in a small room with a telephone and a list. And you're told to spend 4 hours calling people, asking them for money. By the way, AOC doesn't do call time.
Correct. And I haven't got the list of the people who don't do call time, but I think that that's one of the ways that we break free is to break these, to get, find people like AOC who, Alexandria
Ocasio-Cortez,
who will refuse to do call time and rely on small donors. And that's a thing that kind of needs to happen because frankly, every time you make a call and ask for money, there's an implied contract.
Yep.
You help me, I'll help you.
Absolutely.
It just is. And that's the real risk to Medicare for All. But if they hold firm and they don't go with these half measures, we can talk about that in a second if you want, but if they don't go with these half measures like, well, Medicare for 55 and over, Medicare for children, we'll expand Medicare, but we won't take down the current system, those kinds of things. They don't go for half measures. I think they've got a good shot at what Bernie Sanders discussed in 2016, which is to arouse the beast this is my phrase, mm-hmm. to arouse the beast in the electorate so that congressmen have nowhere to hide. I mean, his plan was to be elected president, to take office in 2017, to put forward an agenda, and then to use that massive list to harass and harangue and to hammer Congress into passing it.
Mm-hmm.
That was a pretty good plan. And parts of that plan can still be used to pass Medicare for All. But the beast has to be aroused. So my personal opinion is half measures will make the beast disappointed.
Right.
And you won't have the populist, the hammer from the electorate that you would normally have. And you may get a half measure that keeps most of what's wrong with the current system in place. Or, again, my opinion, you can go for the whole enchilada and get all of the electorate behind you, because right now all of the electorate is behind this. It's 70% of everybody
right.
who wants this to pass.
Right. Now, I got to ask you, Tom, did you see Ryan Grimm's piece at The Intercept on Pelosi's aide, Wendell Primus, his healthcare policy advisor, who apparently has been putting forth the objections to Medicare for All, sort of putting a damper on the whole idea, making a lot of progressives go, what the fuck? Here goes Pelosi again.
Yep, I did. I saw that piece, and I've got a piece that I'm kind of working on. I'm not sure what direction to take it yet. But the bones of that are pretty simple. Ryan Grimm, who wrote the piece, and Ryan Grimm, by the way, is absolutely excellent on this stuff. He has really found himself since leaving Huffington Post, and was very good at Huffington Post, but he's even better now. Ryan Grimm wrote a piece that led with the idea that Pelosi is selling out without saying so.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the second half of the piece included all of the yes buts that the Pelosi team wanted to say. So you're left with two questions, with a question of what are her motives? Are her motives to substitute and sabotage, or are her motives to do something that's more practical and that's a step along the way?
And what do you think?
Well, I think that it's substitute and sabotage myself.
Mm-hmm. So
and the tip off is in the piece, though Ryan didn't make this point, I will. Wendell, what's his name? Goes Primus.
Wendell
goes
Primus,
to the
yes.
Goes to the insurance companies and says, hold on, we got your back. We're gonna start by taking on the drug companies instead of you. I want you to help us in that effort so we can write a bill that takes on the drug companies and their profit, and you help us in doing that. So you can say, so what are they going to say to the drug companies? Are they really going to take on the drug companies? Well, it's in the piece. No,
yeah.
They're not going to take on the drug companies.
Nope.
They're going to take on the drug companies in the absolute margins. Their three-part plan is, I'm doing this from memory here, Pelosi's three-part plan is, one, to make it easier for generic manufacturers to get the supplies they need to do generic manufacturing. Number two, to curb but not eliminate the practice of re-registering drugs as new, even though they make slight tweaks to it,
mm-hmm.
as a way of extending their patent. And delaying the generics. And number three, there's a practice called pay to not make, or pay to not play,
right.
where the big drug companies pay the generic manufacturers, pay them not to make generics. So they're available. It's okay to make them. The IP has passed. They've expired. The intellectual property rights have expired.
Right.
But they're paying people not to supply the product.
Unbelievable.
Which keeps the profit going.
Sure.
Now, those are the three things that Pelosi wants to do to take on the drug manufacturers. Notice what's not on the list. Drug importation from approved foreign countries like Canada mm-hmm. is not on the list. Letting Medicare negotiate drug
right.
prices for all of Medicare is not on the list. So what she's basically going to send Wendell Primus to do to the drug companies is basically say, look, you can. We need somebody to take a hit here for appearances. Why don't you take a small hit, and we will keep everything else in place, and we can shut down this Medicare for All thing in the bud. That's my guess.
Mm-hmm. I think you're right, and it's kind of disconcerting. I will post links on my blog at NicoleSandler.com along with the podcast of today's show to Tom's two pieces from DownWithTyranny.com on Medicare for All and as well as Ryan Grimm's piece from The Intercept, so you can read it all for yourself. This is, I mean, we're here. This is when we should be moving forward on this, and I have a feeling it's going to take at least one or two more democratically controlled elections or elections in which the Democrats win big and maybe take back the Senate and take back the presidency before we see any hope at Medicare for All. I don't think Nancy Pelosi is going to do it for us.
10-second pitch?
10-second, go.
This is the Battle of Hastings. Everybody needs to get into it, period. Join in now. This is our best shot.
There you go. Gaius Publius, the guy we now know as Thomas Neuberger. Find him. You're still on Twitter at Gaius_Publius. I'll put links to all that on the blog. Thank you so much, Tom. It's always great talking with you.
Great talking with you, Nicole.
Take care. Bye-bye.